gavel. So, it's important that you're able to communicate effectively. Slamming things on the table might get people's attention, but that's not the type of attention you're looking for. You need to send the message that you are worth listening to. People who are worth listening to convey a certain sense of self, which is rooted in confidence. That message is sent via all the verbal and nonverbal clues we give others. Our understanding of where our weaknesses and strengths lie can inform a better understanding of those same qualities in others. Authority and influence. Authority and influence are two entirely different things. I'd rather be in a position of influence than one of authority. Influence is subtle. Authority is obvious. Influence is covert. Authority is overt. As an influencer, you have much more latitude than you might in a position of authority, because people in positions of authority are bound by the conventions of that same authority. For instance, a government leader may want to enact legislation, but is unable to due to a fractious legislative body. But lobby groups, citizens groups, and non-governmental organizations can wield great influence in moving that fractious legislative body and getting the job done. Authority does a good job of looking powerful, but influence is the little man behind the curtain, actually getting things done. To wield influence, it's not necessary to be in a position of authority or power for this reason. Influence is like the water that eventually erodes stone, subtle and unseen, but very real. While authority may well be the Hulk, influence is the ninja stalking its objectives with determination, consistency, and persistent dedication. Influential skill is a very desirable aptitude to cultivate for this reason. The Center for Creative Leadership has established that influence has three essential components and an accompanying set of tactics: emotion, logic, and cooperation. The first of these is probably the most accessible road to influence, as people's emotional lives are very close to the surface most of the time. Appealing to those you want to enlist to your cause via their emotions involves expressing your own conviction about whatever that cause is, and moreover, expressing a belief that they have a pivotal part to play in the realization of your vision. To make an effective emotional appeal, your powers of communicative interpretation come to the forefront. Who are you appealing to? Knowing this is key to effectively mounting an appeal rooted in emotion. What are your person's values and beliefs? What goal is this person shooting for, and how can you help them get there? How does your vision uphold all these emotional factors and honor them? Being keenly aware of the values of the person you're talking to and how you can weave those values into your vision is how you build support using an influential emotional appeal. Appealing to someone's logic involves showcasing the benefits of your vision to the organization or group, and also the person you're appealing to. A strong case built on logic will be accompanied by concrete evidence that your cause is not only viable but desirable in terms of implementation. This tactical style of influence demands that you be intimately connected with the nuts and bolts of your vision and passionate about influencing others to support it. Be fully prepared to defend your vision against objections by reading your plan or idea through the eyes of a critic. Your critical deconstruction of your vision is a crucial part of the success of a logical appeal. Positive team building can result from a well-crafted cooperative appeal in which you outline a plan or project in terms of mutual support and benefit. Creating a consultative framework for all parties to involve themselves in implementation is highly effective as a way of building influence. As you put people to work, you display confidence in their abilities. This creates strong networks of influence, as people don't forget those who've given them opportunities. They also don't forget strong leadership that results in effective action. By applying a cooperative appeal in support of a vision or project, you're not only realizing your goal, but you're undergirding your influence. From the process, it's inevitable that you will also grow new thought leaders for your organization, which is nothing but positive and casts you as a visionary. Effective influence combines all three strategies concurrently and builds organizational confidence in your abilities. Where authority can prescribe, influence can actually fill the prescription. The doctor may pull down the big bucks, but the pharmacist delivers the cure. So wielding influence is about building networks, knowing who you're talking to, and being capable of providing logical and compelling reasons for what you have in mind. In learning to build your influential power, you're engaging your powers of communicative interpretation, emotional intelligence, and critical thinking. All these factors in the practice of influence are hallmarks of leadership. In developing these skills, you're becoming a more well-rounded person and a force to be reckoned with. Modeling excellence. Influence is also inherent in your actions, your demeanor, and your treatment of other people. Your work habits, your attention to detail, your presentation, and your likability all work together. They make you someone who is capable of wielding influence in any situation or organization. All these factors are just as important as your messaging, your knowledge and training, and your people-reading skills. People want to work with those they like. They want to spend their at least 8 hours per day, 5 days per week, around people they find easy to get along with, helpful and cooperative. That's the bare minimum. If you're hoping to develop your influence in the workplace, then it goes without saying that you need to go the extra mile when it comes to modeling excellence. Excellent employees don't just come in to work on time and leave a little late. They're not just willing to help and cooperate. Excellent employees see details others don't. They tie up loose ends, volunteer for projects others aren't necessarily interested in, and help to create an environment of harmonious efficiency and genial collegiality. These are the foundations of excellence. Out of that foundation grows the solid stuff of organizational integrity, built by quality work that's doing a lot more than collecting a paycheck. It's building something as part of a team, and intentionally so. How excellence is modeled is in the details many overlook. Excellent employees sweat that apparently small stuff because they know it matters. Excellence is in a collection of minutia that culminates in a whole. Your mood in the workplace, your reputation among your peers, the quality of your work, the quality of your interactions, your place on the team, your consistency and commitment. These are all components of excellence, and they're worthy of emulation. That's why others will emulate it. Those who aren't interested in doing so, who watch with jaded, envious eyes as excellence builds its influential power, are of no consequence. They're not interested, and that won't go unnoticed when push comes to shove or downsizing comes to down. What matters is that you're being the change you want to see. Modeling excellence means making yourself an icon of your vision and its soundness. This is what gets you heard and noticed in influencing those around you. Client care excellence. You're likely to retain clients who feel you understand them, even when they aren't particularly communicative verbally. It's a sign they feel that you have internalized their needs, when, with just a gesture or two, they can let you know where they're at. This also fosters a sense of familiarity and congeniality that inspires customer loyalty. They'll feel that you value them because it's clear you can read them well. In short, by being able to perceive your client's nonverbal communication, you endear yourself to them and make yourself a trusted friend. Likewise, you need to be understood by them without either party having to resort to long emails or sitting through endless time-wasting meetings. Solid business relationships are all about ease of communication and communal satisfaction with their quality. Being able to read the nonverbal cues offered by your clients can set you apart as an intuitive, savvy leader. When excellence is inherent in your work and communication style, it will typify your client relationships. This is undeniable. The same excellence you model in your day-to-day work flows into the client relationship, strengthening it and sustaining it in a world of competitive challengers. Client care is what sets the best apart. As always, God is in the details. Understanding client need is rooted in understanding the client. The rhythms of the business involved, branding, budgeting, and human resources. All of this information is your business, and having a strong command of it, as well as an open and communicative relationship with your clients, can set you well apart. You're there when needed, and you are effective. Excellent custom care amounts to a sense of service, a word too seldom heard. It should be your very favorite word when it comes to your clients, even if those clients who are internal, your co-workers. Some minor factors to consider, which may sometimes elude us, amount to social niceties that also count as body language. These are forms of communication that continue to be important, regardless of their diminished cultural significance in some circles. It's important to understand the following information about engagement in the course of business interactions. These are professional interactions, not personal ones. For that reason, please read the following as a proviso against entirely preventable faux pas. Little slips in such seemingly inconsequential areas may seem excusable, but they can cost you valuable influence that you're trying to build up, not tear down. They matter. Firm handshake. Have you ever thought about what a firm handshake says to your current or potential client? A firm, confident handshake sends the message that you're resolved and in control. Even today, the message of a firm handshake is that of competence and reliability. It means business in the most basic sense. There was a day, not so very long ago, when women in business, who were rare, didn't extend their hands to be shaken by male business people. Women simply operated on a different level than men did in those times. These days, though, women are expected to similarly deliver a strong, confident handshake, which does not linger unduly, but is not retracted suddenly, as though being snatched from a fiery furnace. There's a happy medium. Take care with being overly familiar with clients you don't know. Adding a hand on the shoulder or a pat on the back is for those you know well. It's not for the client you've just signed on. Knowing when such additional nonverbal communication is appropriate is part of being able to read the bones of interpersonal niceties, especially in business. Eye contact. Handle with care. Making direct eye contact sends the message that you're genuinely interested in what the other person is saying. Of course, you should assess the length and intensity of the gaze. Sustained eye contact can be read as intimidation or even sexual interest, so it's important that you look away occasionally, punctuating the action with a nod of the head or other accompanying mannerisms to ensure it's not misunderstood as diminished interest. Chapter 6. Techniques for Effective Communication. You are at an advantage when you can communicate effectively. After all, you're the person who knows your goals and how you hope to achieve them. The point is that you are not going to achieve those goals single-handedly because you don't live in isolation. Every single one of us needs allies, friends, and supporters along the way. How do you work with other people unless you can get your point across? How can you develop strong and lasting alliances unless you understand what's going on with the people you work with? Earlier, we discussed building influence and how you can achieve that through a variety of strategic devices, as well as being someone who models excellence in all you do. Now, we'll look at some of the other techniques to support what we've already learned. Following are some useful psychological techniques that help in effective communication. Neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, created in the 1970s by two California doctors, Drs. Bandler and Grinder. Neuro-linguistic programming is a method employing theories of psychoanalysis and communication toward helping people develop themselves more fully. NLP advances the idea that many of our behaviors are programmed and can be altered for the better due to a link through linguistic and neurological realities. There are strong links between what we do, what we say, or how we behave that doctors Bandler and Grinder believed in developing NLP could be useful for the modification of undesirable or socially unviable behaviors. They further believed that these alterations would result in dramatic improvements in the quality of the relationships and professional lives of those who used these techniques. NLP's goal is to understand how the human mind perceives things, how to use all your senses comprehensively to effectively send your intended message through verbal and nonverbal communication. NLP can also help you apply this understanding in order to communicate more effectively by creating rapport between you and other people. Needless to say, how you present yourself and what you have to say matters a lot with regard to the way others perceive you. When our neuro-linguistic patterning provokes behaviors that prevent effective communication, this can be repatterned in order to deliver better results. Does it mean you are failing if you can't persuade someone to change their mind or budge on a dearly held position? The answer is no. It just means you need a bit of personal tweaking. As we discuss throughout this book, part of that has to do with understanding yourself and how you present to others. It also has to do with applying that knowledge to your own perceptions about other people. But when it comes to our behaviors, some of which have to do with nonverbal language, perhaps NLP is the silver bullet to more successful and fruitful interactions with other people. With your sharpened communication skills, you'll still be fostering a constructive work environment because NLP is helpful in doing just that by virtue of the following characteristics. Helps you communicate clearly. Helps you have a positive personal impact on people. Helps you build trust among colleagues and friends. Helps you put people at ease, and by doing so, elicits sincere reactions and feedback from them. Helps you build respect among colleagues and friends. Helps you appreciate other people's point of view, even when it differs from your own. Helps you use the existing climate to bring about your preferred outcome. And what is the result of using the NLP technique? Your workplace team can reiterate what you have communicated to them correctly and mirror your intentions, ensuring they deliver the outcomes you desire. You provide your team with the opportunity to express their opinions, even when they differ from your own. This tension is healthy and encourages creative dissent, which can build a team through confidence in your leadership and in the validity of team opinions. Your technique can enhance the impact of your verbal message, serving a complementary role. For example, a pat on the back delivered in concert with a verbal message of approval for a job well done has a reinforcing effect, which complements the spoken message. You can underline your verbal message when you throw your hands in the air as you verbalize your exasperation. That's called accenting. All of these changes in your communication style are possible with NLP. Of course, seeking out a trained professional to assist you with the process is highly recommended. If you feel that resorting to clinical help is necessary to help you succeed in life in places where you've gotten stuck, it's well worth considering. Self-hypnosis. Just for clarification, this technique has nothing to do with the Svengali effect, in which a stage hypnotist attempts to overwhelm your personal autonomy, inducing you to submit to his charismatic control. Life is not a movie. Here, you're not going to learn how to put anyone in a trance. This technique is concerned with fostering effective communication by encouraging your mind to work at a higher level. You'll learn to clear out distracting thoughts arising from your environment and to delve deeply into your thought processes. By following this technique, you can come to understand what you want and how you intend to go about getting it. You'll also learn to decipher nonverbal cues you have noted in your interactions with others, providing you with an objective reading of all the factors in any given situation. This process can enhance your objectivity and improve your ability to make rationally informed and sound decisions. In short, self-hypnosis helps you achieve the following: avoid distractions and improve concentration. Solve problems by having a better and more well-rounded understanding of them. Formulate ideas as part of a strategic plan you can then put into practice. Taking the time to train your mind to be quiet and to make space for rapid analysis and evaluation is a worthwhile pursuit. It may sound a little unorthodox, but making it possible for your brain to make decisions based on careful analysis instead of being alive with detritus that's not serving you in the project of moving forward with your life is something which can genuinely make you more effective in every area of your life. Self-hypnosis can help you achieve this. Chapter 7. Using NLP to Manage People. When it comes to managing people effectively, it's important that you first understand the nonverbal cues they provide in order to be able to apply your skills toward influencing them. This is an important principle in applying the NLP technique. Following are a few NLP techniques that can allow you to influence people's perception and thinking. Deciphering eye movements. The reason it's important to understand the meaning of eye movements is that each eye movement tells its own tale. For instance, when you're searching for the right word or trying to remember a name, you automatically move your eyes in a certain way, most likely squinting. Rolling the eyes signals contempt or exasperation. Winking indicates flirtation or a joke. Widening the eyes signals surprise or shock, even extreme excitement. We've discussed earlier how eye movements are also implicated in other facial expressions. In fact, the eyes can reveal much more about people's mental and emotional status all on their own. Once you understand what other people's thought processes are, you can accurately follow a course of action or dialogue which acknowledges the unspoken response, as signaled by the eyes. And as you may know, eye movements complement other forms of communication, such as hand movement, speech, and as stated elsewhere in this book and above, facial expressions. Dilation of the pupils, breathing, angle of the body, position of the hands, all these are complementary to the spoken message. Still, eye movement is very important in communication because every movement is influenced by particular senses as well as different parts of the brain. Here's how you can generally interpret eye movement. Visual responsiveness. Eyes upward, then towards the right. Whenever a person tilts eyes upward and then to the right, it means that the person is formulating a mental picture. Eyes upward, then towards the left. Whenever a person tilts eyes upward, then followed by eye movement to the left, it means the person is recalling a certain image. Eyes looking straight ahead. Whenever someone focuses directly in front of them, as though looking at a point in the distance, this indicates that the person is not focused on anything in particular, that it's the look often referred to as glazed. Auditory responsiveness. Eyes looking towards the right. When a person's eyes shift straight towards the right, it means the person is in the process of constructing a sound. Eyes looking towards the left. When a person's eyes shift straight towards the left, it indicates the person is recalling sound. Audio-digital responsiveness. Eyes looking downward, then switching to the left. When someone drops their eyes and then proceeds to turn their eyes to the left, this signals that the person is engaged in internal dialogue. Eyes looking right down, then left to right. when a person looks downward and then proceeds to turn their eyes to the left and then to the right in consecutive movements, it means that the person is engaged in negative self-talk. Kinesthetic responsiveness. Here, the person looks directly down, only to turn the eyes to the right. That is an indication that the person is evaluating emotional status. This further indicates that the person is not at ease. Verbal responses. Rhythmic speech. The idea here is not to be poetic as you speak, but to speak at a regular pace. The recommended pace of speaking is equated to the heartbeat, say, between 45 and 72 beats per minute. At that pace, you're likely to sustain the listener's attention and establish greater receptivity to what you're saying. While normal conversational speed averages about 140 words per minute, slowing down a little and taking time to pause is highly effective as a means of sustaining people's attention. Your regular cadence should be punctuated by fluctuations in tone and emphasis in order not to sound monotonous. Repeating key words. When you're trying to influence someone, there are key words or phrases which carry additional weight as far as your message is concerned. This method of speaking is a way of embedding the message in the listener and subtly suggesting that your message is valid and worthy of reception. Repeating key words also suggests commitment, conviction, and mastery of the subject matter. Using strongly suggestive language. Use language that is positive and supporting of what you're saying, using a selection set of strong descriptive words or phrases. As you do this, you should observe the person you're speaking to closely in a way that makes them feel as though you are seeing right through them and aware of what they are thinking. Don't be invasive about this or aggressive. Merely suggest, by way of your gaze, that you have a keen appreciation of what makes people tick. This places you in a dominant position, especially when accompanied by dominant body language like steepling. See section on hand gestures. It helps to use suitable complementary body language as you speak to subtly underscore the message. Touching the person lightly as you speak. Touching the person as you speak to them draws their attention to you in a relaxed and familiar way. By employing this technique, you're preparing the listener to absorb what you're saying to them, a way of programming attentiveness. Those engaging in intergender conversations in the workplace should take great care with this technique, as it can lead to misunderstandings. Using a mixture of hot and vague words. Hot words are those that tend to provoke specific sensations in the listener. When you're using them to influence someone's thinking, it's advisable to use them in a suitable pattern. Examples of phrases containing hot words are, "It means, feel free, see this, because, hear this." The effect of employing these words and phrases is that you're directly influencing the listener's state of mind, including how that person feels, imagines, and perceives. You're also appealing to the sense most prevalent in the listener's perceptive style, as observed through the movement of their eyes. For example, the phrase, "hear this," will appeal to those who indicate a tendency to respond most actively to auditory stimuli. Using the interspersal technique. The interspersal technique is the practice of stating one thing while hoping to impress on the listener something entirely different. For example, you could make a positive statement like, "John is very generous, but some people take advantage of him and treat him as though he is gullible." When someone hears this statement, the likely assumption is that you want people to appreciate John's generosity. That is likely to be the message heard, and yet the subtext is that while John is generous, he is also considered gullible, and thus at a disadvantage in life when it comes to other people. Your hidden agenda may be to influence the listener to actually think of John as gullible, which calls into question his judgment. So emphasize the words "but" and gullible. The word but serves the purpose of transitioning the perceived compliment to John to an implicit slight. The techniques just described form strategies in the service of influencing people. They're not intended to force a viewpoint or to control people's behavior for nefarious ends. These techniques are intended to modify undesirable behaviors, which may be resulting in workplace difficulties, including the failure of staff to work well together or to complete team projects. They're also extremely helpful in the context of relationships with young people and children, whether at home or in a learning environment. Techniques of subtle manipulative effect like those described, though capable of influencing people and their behavior, don't amount to anything even approaching coercion. The person being spoken to chooses all responses and is merely influenced or steered toward those responses. Chapter 8, Combining Hypnosis and NLP in Communication. Understanding the Human Mind. To be able to choose the best tool of communication in any circumstance, you need to be in a position to understand the workings of the human mind. Then, you can proceed to evaluate the tools at your disposal to see which are best suited to your attempts at persuasion. First of all, we're gathering abundant information from nonverbal cues in the course of our lives, whether we're aware it's happening or not. Being aware of the information we're gathering renders it useful and helpful. All this information is stored in your mind. However, since your mind is just like a computer and can crash from intensity of too much data, it stores a lot of that information in its archives, only to retrieve it when required. The retrieved information is then programmed in your mind's subconscious, and from there it influences your responses and behavior in ways you may not always understand if you're unaware. Hypnosis and NLP. When it comes to hypnosis and NLP, both are effective tools of communication, and particularly persuasion, yet their approaches to communication are different. However, when you're trying to influence someone, these complement each other very well as communication tools. They both have powerful effects on the subconscious, the level of the mind in which information processing and programming takes place. What happens with hypnosis, and also NLP, is that you present suggestions to the person you're trying to influence. Suggestions intended for the person's unconscious mind. This means your intentions at the point of communication are not explicit or obvious to the person you are communicating with. Yet, you succeed in embedding that information in the person's unconscious mind. That information is available for retrieval as you continue giving your well-tailored suggestions. It's then programmed into the person's subconscious in a way that influences their actions to suit your intentions. It's time to dispel the misguided notion that hypnosis and NLP are tricky gimmicks intended to manipulate people into abandoning their free will. You need to see both techniques as tools that can help you influence people by restructuring the process of their thinking. Hypnosis, a tool that's feared by many, derives its effectiveness from helping to induce in the subject a state of awareness that is more heightened than usual. That's why you're able to reach the person's subconscious and influence a change in behavior through a change in the way they think and therefore perceive. In simple terms, what is hypnosis and what is NLP? Hypnosis. Hypnosis is both a state of mind and a process of communication. It is all natural, not induced by anything chemical. It's completely safe. Hypnosis may be carried out verbally, with a hypnotist uttering words which embedded in the subject a change in behavior, quitting smoking, for only one example. In other instances, it's predominantly visual. At other times, hypnosis may be driven by auditory stimuli. With a hypnosis, the subject remains fully aware of their particular surroundings, In short, it's not true that hypnosis subjects are under a trance or experience anything far removed from normal consciousness. Hypnosis induces deep concentration that focuses subjects so profoundly that external suggestions are more readily accepted. It's a technique that has been proven scientifically to help in accelerating changes in human behavior. It is a state of mind in which subjects remain fully alert and focused. Hypnosis is not sleep, even though that's what's suggested in the word's Greek origins. In reality, the process of hypnosis involves a deep level of concentration, enhanced relaxation, and more ready reception of suggestion, as well as expectation. While in the hypnotic state, the subject's focus is guided by selective thinking, so that the practitioner establishes a desired behavioral or perceptive change. The process of hypnosis bypasses critical thinking. This is how hypnosis works to arrive at an understanding on the part of the subject that the suggestion provided is valid. The subject of hypnosis does not critically analyze this suggestion because the left side of the brain, which is in charge of analyzing information, switches off during hypnosis, leaving only the right side of the brain working and in an enhanced state of attentiveness. Hypnosis is an easy tool to use, and you don't need any special talent to be able to apply it in effective communication. Research has shown that 90% of the people can be successfully hypnotized. History teaches that there are many leaders who have managed to hypnotize people with words and complimentary body language. Some of these leaders have used this ability to nefarious ends, but hypnosis is a tool that can be used to provoke desirable behavioral change toward positive goals. NLP. NLP is a modern science concerned with human behavior. It's becoming more popular and widely practiced by the day, owing to its effectiveness in improving social interactions, work environments, and many other spheres in which people interact. NLP is based on the belief that language affects communication and subsequently affects behavior. NLP is based on techniques formulated by Milton Erickson, a very influential hypnotherapist and psychologist, and also a pioneer in family therapy. It is a system that involves identifying behavioral patterns toward their modification. Its impact is quite rapid compared to other persuasion techniques. People who employ NLP as a way of improving a variety of personal competence and skill are often those with a clear vision about what they want to achieve in their chosen field. Today, fields embracing NLP as a tool for improvement include athletics, health, education, business, personal development, and professional development. NLP is about making the environment comfortable for the subject and also safe for everyone involved, encouraging subjects to respond rapidly and effectively. It is not a detached scientific theorem, but which is abundantly evidenced in human behavior. For example, a salesperson competent in NLP is able to succeed in his or her career by following NLP's step-by-step process based on the five senses. Such a salesperson is able to build rapport with a client because of an ability to detect when a buyer has unspoken objections, and further, how to overcome those objections by appealing to the subject profile, a tailored communicative style. NLP not only leads to people adjusting their attitudes, it also leads to productive and positive changes to problematic behaviors. Chapter 9, Practical Influence. Alan Cohen and David Bradford are the co-authors of the book Influence Without Authority. As discussed earlier in this book, authority and influence are two very different animals. Some believe that authority is the key driver of change, but my contention, and that of the authors of the book, is that it's possible to effect real change with influence without having any actual authority. Their work focuses on some key components of learning, how to influence people in positions that wield more power than the one you're in. This applies to bosses, political leaders, or anyone who is recognized as authoritative by virtue of their position. Knowing what matters to people who've climbed a little higher up the ladder than you, without having to resort to political mechanizations, which can be dangerous and even destructive, is the key to being able to do this. Creating partnerships with people in positions of authority is also a key influential skill. Having something to offer them which appeals to their core values and interests, discussed earlier in this book, while having a logical framework to support your ability to achieve these kinds of partnerships. Mutual respect. Forming partnerships has everything to do with reciprocity. Scratching someone's back should result in an equal and opposite reaction, scratching yours. If mutual respect is present in the relationship, if you show your employees contempt, it's understandable that they mirror that contempt by not giving a hoot about what happens to your business beyond getting their wages. The best way to influence people positively is to treat them with respect. You may not know your employees at a personal level and may not really know what they are capable of. By the same token, not honoring your role in the organization, whether it stems from a resentment for authority or a simple neglect, is disrespectful. You won't form any partnerships if you're not modeling personal excellence that's measurable and visible. Learning who people are and what their ethical universes are like is the first step to being able to influence them. Personal interactions are based on building your knowledge of individual personalities and interacting with each person you know, live with, or work with on their level. This is only possible when it's pursued from a genuine interest in people, and leaders all have that going for them. Situations where this influence model is most effective. When you have no authority over someone but need their help. When you are dealing with a person who is disinclined to help. When you have no goodwill or friendship with a person from whom you need help. When you hardly know the person you want to solicit help from. How to carry out the reciprocity model of influence. Develop the notion that everyone is potentially helpful. Everyone around you is a potential ally. This should go without saying, but in a hierarchically based society, we tend to overlook people who are decision-makers, gatekeepers, or somehow part of the top tier of whatever enterprise you're involved in. Everyone around you is not only worthy of your respect, but potentially someone with information, entree, or other supportive ballast. Life is a matter of seeing other people as part of your personal support network. That's a mutual thing. Remember that as you move forward. Allies work together. It's also important to think of the world as a deeply interconnected place in which someone you know knows someone you need to know. Sooner or later, the goodwill you spread all around you, evident in the network you'll build because of that goodwill, will render a connection that's going to bear abundant fruit. By the same token, ill will can spread just as rapidly and break important connections, cutting you off from potential allies. Keep that in mind each and every day, and remember that you are only as connected as your most recent connection suggests, and that one should have been made the last time you went out the door. By having this positive outlook, you avoid being anxious as you approach people to enlist their help or support. You also become well-liked and pleasant to be around, and people, of course, love that. Seeing that you're willing to make an approach encourages people to lend you their car and consider you and your ideas with an open mind. It also means your intelligence network grows, because every single person you meet is a fountain of information. With that network growth, your reputation as a person of integrity and honesty grows. Have your priorities straight. constantly demanding that other people come around to your way of thinking is not going to build your relationships. It's going to tear them down. If you're seen as single-mindedly focused on achieving personal goals, you'll be viewed as the type of relentless type A jerk most people don't want to be around. Subtlety is the watchword ever in your mind. Maintain your network through genuine friendship and allegiance, and you won't need to be that way. You'll find that people just agree with you because they like you. Being personable and easy to be around is the best possible strategy for getting things done the way you want them done. This is a well-known fact. People want to work with people they like. Being liked and admired is always the best way to build a support system and a sterling reputation that will bring you into the presence of those who can help and support your ideas and your goals. Ultimately, then, your first priority is the cultivation of strong, reliable relationships with those around you. These will stand you in good stead. Who's who? It's important that you understand, for example, if the person whose opinion you're seeking has a personal relationship with a business owner or the chief executive of the enterprise you're involved in. You may wish to seek a second opinion if you realize, for instance, that the CEO is this person's brother or golf buddy. At the same time, knowing what sort of relationships are in play is part of building your network. It's important to understand the dynamics of your workplace and the relationships involved. That's more than possible when your network is built on trust in you and your integrity. If anyone in that network suspects you can't be trusted, it's likely many will, even all.